FOMO.
My name is Patrick J. McGinnis, and I'm a FOMO sapiens. And since you're here, I'm going to bet that you are too. And when you're like us and Monday comes around, you don't dread the new week. No, you wake up every Monday morning knowing that this week might just be the best one yet. This is FOMO Monday, the snackable show that starts your week right with hot takes, life hacks, listener mail, and even some FOMO therapy. Hey everybody, this is FOMO Monday, the companion show to FOMO Sapiens. We will be back with an episode on Thursday, of course, as we always are. But until then, happy FOMO Monday, my favorite day of the week. I'm your host, Patrick J. McGinnis, venture capitalist by day, author and podcaster by night, FOMO Sapiens 24/7. Now, today I have a very special guest. We're going to be talking about what is going on in Ukraine, and specifically what's going on in Poland, just next door, where there is an influx of refugees, people who need help, and what is going on to help these people. Now, as you know, FOMO Mondays is about teeing up our Thursday episode. And so Thursday, my guest is Reza Aslan, the author of No God But God, a religious scholar turned unexpected entrepreneur, entrepreneurial renegade. So a really good fit for this season. But how does that fit into the topic today? Well, I think there's really two things. Number one, we are coming up on Thanksgiving. We are in the Thanksgiving period. And so it's important to think about, you know, folks who a year ago had pretty normal lives, lives like yours and mine, are now displaced. And so it's important to remember these people, keep them in our thoughts and figure out how to help them. And second of all is we're going to be talking about work that's being done at the JCC, the Jewish Community Center in Krakow. And so, you know, there's religion tying into Thursday, religious scholar. I know it's not the best, tightest tie-in, but I think more appropriately thinking about this time of year, I feel pretty comfortable with that justification. And so let me tell you about who we're going to be talking to today. My guest is Jonathan Ornstein. He has served as the executive director of the Jewish Community Center of Krakow in Poland, obviously, since its opening in 2008 by the Prince of Wales, now King Charles. The organization is devoted to rebuilding Jewish life in Krakow and has become one of Poland's most visible signs of Jewish revival. Jonathan is a native of New York City and he moved to Israel in 1994. He lived there for 7 years on a kibbutz in the Negev Desert, and then he served 2 years in combat in the IDF before making his way to Poland in 2001. So, you know, that is like the kind of person we have on FOMO Sapiens, obviously, a very fascinating character with a story to tell. So, Jonathan, thanks for coming to FOMO Sapiens. Welcome.
Thank you, Patrick. It's an honor to be here with you.
All right. So, first of all, before we get into the work you're doing today, I would love to just hear a little bit about, you know, it's not everybody who moves from New York City to the desert and lives on a kibbutz. So tell us a little bit about your background and why you chose that path.
Sure. I joke around because I went from New York to Israel to Poland. And historically, that's been the opposite journey of Jews, yeah. Certainly World War II and afterwards. So I grew up in New York City. I grew up Orthodox Jew, but it was never something that kind of sat well with me. So I did all I could to distance myself from that. And after college, I went to school in North Carolina, which is, again, trying to get out of that sort of...
I was like, that is not the most Jewish place I've heard of.
And that's how I chose. I was about to start law school. Thought it might not really for me. I'll try to defer for a year. If they let me, great. If not, at least I tried. And they were very happy for me to defer for a year. And it was getting cold in New York. I met somebody who was living in Israel on a kibbutz in the desert. I thought it would be great. So I went to Israel and fell in love with that and living where I was. It was a big change from New York City to be in the middle of the desert. I loved it, decided to become a citizen, was in the army for a while, as you mentioned. And that's how I got there. And then Poland is another story. I met a Polish woman, a volunteer on the kibbutz, and decided in a little bit later to move to Poland sight unseen.
That's amazing. That is, you know, that's the thing. Like it's the classic story of like, you know, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, from the John Lennon song. So you end up in Poland and today you're running the JCC there, which is, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Jewish sort of community, you know, the YMCA, like the song, it's sort of like in a sense, I guess that's how I think about it. The Jewish Community Center is like the YMCA in the Jewish community, where it's a place for people to gather. Maybe there should be a song about it. There isn't, but you know, something to think about. But you know, you are leading this community, and you're of course right next door to Ukraine and all of this, you know, all of the upheaval that's happened there. Of course, Poland has been a major recipient of the refugee community. So talk about what is the work you're doing right now and what you're seeing in Krakow right now.
Sure. So we are, the JCC where I am is about 2.5 hour drive from Ukraine. Our normal work here, we're very close to Auschwitz, which was the center, the epicenter of the Holocaust. And we're trying to rebuild the Jewish community that was decimated by the Holocaust and then really driven underground during communism. And now as it reemerges, we're trying to bring people, get people to really come out of the closet, and people are finding out about their Jewish identity that didn't know and are getting involved. So that's sort of what we've been doing for the past 14 years. And then 7 months ago when the war started, we made a couple decisions. And one was that we were gonna do all we could to help Ukraine. And the second was that we were gonna help Jews and non-Jews equally. That in a place of Jewish suffering with the Holocaust and before and after even, we were gonna try to alleviate the suffering of others. So that meant straight away started with a food pantry and like a free shop inside our building that we opened, that a few people came the first days, and that turned into a flood really. And that's about 500 people a day now who are coming in to receive food, diapers, toiletries, whatever they need. And there's a dozen other programs. We're running a safe space for women, and we're daycare, and we were active on the Ukrainian border, which has now quieted down, and inside Ukraine sending supplies. And overall, we've helped 130,000 people directly. We've hired 40 people, so we've doubled the size of our institution. We were 35 full-time before February 24th, and we're 75 full-time now. And it's been a steep learning curve, because we're not a humanitarian organization, or we weren't, and have had to really figure it out as we're going along. But where we are and our history, I think, has made what we do very necessary.
So on FOMO Sapiens, we really focus on how, you know, we make decisions in complicated situations and how we figure out what's the thing that, you know, we can do a million things, right? There's a billion ways that you could figure out a way to contribute to, you know, helping refugees, right? Not a billion, but there's many. You have chosen the specific set of solutions. Like, how do you figure it out? Because I imagine the beginning, like, it's not... This is one of these things we saw coming, obviously. I have a good friend who's actually Polish, and he would text me all the time and say, like, there's all these troops in Belarus on the border. Like, he, you know, people see it coming. But like anything else, like COVID even, it's like you see it coming, but when it happens, you're like, whoa. How did you figure out what you needed to do when that moment came?
I think for us, the most important thing was just the decision to act and not to question too much what we were doing, and to understand that we were going to make mistakes, but that the most important was just to act. So we decided that we were just going to go all in and started to do what we could. And there are always people around who can give you the expertise. The desire and the connections that you have in the world are far more important than any specific expertise. There's always somebody who knows how to set up a refugee center and how to advise you about this and what you should be carrying and what times to be open and all these little details that you might think would get in the way. We knew we wanted to do it. We started to do it, and we knew we would get help around the world. And because of the connections that we've had, and because we've been able to meet a lot of people who passed through our institution in the last 14 years, we understood that we hoped that we would be able to find the support to do what we were going to do. And as much support as we could get, that would dictate the level of our involvement. And so far, that support has been fantastic, and we've been able to help a lot of people. FOMO.
Tudo bem, meus queridos FOMO sapiens? Now, that right there was Portuguese. And as you know, I love speaking foreign languages. But I'm not alone. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off that list with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Now, FOMO sapiens, you know I speak four languages, and it takes work to stay on top of them, especially with French. C'est difficile. But with Babbel, I'm able to practice practical conversations that I can actually use in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/FOMO. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/FOMO. That's spelled BABBEL.com/FOMO. Rules and restrictions may apply. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Your business gets to a certain size and the cracks start to emerge. Things you used to do in a day are taking a week. You don't have one source of truth. If this is you, you should know these three numbers. 37,000, 25, 1. 37,000. That's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25. NetSuite turns 25 this year. Happy birthday. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, close the books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. One, because your business is one of a kind, so you get a customized solution for all of your KPIs. Those are key performance indicators in one efficient system. Now, FOMO sapiens, you know the show is all about making better decisions. And with this product, you can make better decisions because you have all the information you need right in one place. Right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely free at netsuite.com/FOMO. That's netsuite.com/FOMO to get your own KPI checklist. Because you know what? KPIs are better than ice cream. netsuite.com/FOMO.
FOMO. And what have you learned along the way? Like, I guess if you could go back to yourself, you know, 7 months ago and, you know, travel in time and sit down and be like, okay, Jonathan, like, let me just save you a couple of, like, you know, sort of headaches. Like, what would you tell yourself about what you've learned that would make your sort of work easier?
I guess, first of all, trust your instincts. It maybe sounds quite banal to say, but if you think you should do something, then don't question it too much. You're in the position that you're in because people believe in you, and you shouldn't worry too much about that. And don't be afraid to act. I don't think any of my board members will be listening. So I didn't really go through the traditional process and board approval and go and discuss this and how this would affect us and what will our budget look like and what are we going to do? I just realized this is a crisis, and in crises, one acts. And I've just been always mindful of the history here, and that we're spending every day for 14 years trying to rebuild a community that was destroyed because of the massive indifference that the community, the Jews, faced years ago. And you don't often get a chance, almost never have a chance, to fix history. And we're not able to go back in time and to save people that were murdered, but we can prevent people in the future from suffering. That's really been our mantra and our ethos since then. So I'm very happy with the way we've done it. I'm thrilled with the response of the world, but it was a little bit flying blind there in the beginning, that we made a decision and we hoped that it would work out.
And for the people that come into your center, I've listened to a lot of podcasts and read a lot about what's going on in Ukraine. Obviously, you know, it's a different thing to be on the front lines. But one of the things that really strikes me, that I think for anybody who's listening is really relatable, is you have people who, you know, were living in Kyiv or, you know, Lviv or whatever, one of these, or Kherson, or, you know, someplace in Ukraine, who, like, it's on Monday morning, they're making, you know, musical lesson appointments for their kid, or they're taking their cardiac fix. It's like a normal life. And then, you know, a couple of days later, they're getting their car back from the shop because they're fleeing the country and they're under attack. So it goes from literally normal life. Yeah, obviously people knew there was a threat, but you go from a normal life where you're worried about, like, getting the groceries to running out of the country with whatever you can grab. And so it's very defining. It's very defining, like, what matters and what doesn't and what you need to do. And I'm curious, you know, obviously this isn't the first refugee crisis. These happen all the time, unfortunately. And obviously in your work representing Jewish community, this is not the first refugee crisis, because in the World War II era, obviously, there were massive refugees and people who were displaced, and among other things. Like, what does it do to somebody? How does it change them to live through this kind of experience?
I've been stunned by the resilience of the Ukrainian people. And, you know, we're talking about, it's very important to emphasize, you're talking here about 90 somewhat percent women and children. right? So not only the experience of being, you know, having your losing your home and being, you know, bombed and things that have been happening to them, sexual violence, terrible things, but then they're also separated from their families. And the strength and resilience of Ukrainian women has been absolutely unbelievable, what they've been able to do. And, you know, and for us, we're mindful that, you know, you try not to just see people as refugees in the moment they're in a certain situation. But they're, you know, refugee is a term that we use. These are people that had lives, as you pointed out, and a lot of them very, very good, satisfying, productive, interesting lives before. And they are the same people that had those lives. And I think it's up to us not only to help them and support them, which is in some ways the easy thing to do. It's easy to give somebody, you know, a pasta, a sandwich, diapers. But I think for us, what's been a challenge and that we're really focused on is doing it with dignity. So we have a pantry, and we've tried to make it, when people come in to take whatever they're taking, we try to make it exactly like a shopping experience. They have little shopping baskets. They come, they check, you know, so it's all like being in a shop, except at the very end, instead of paying, they don't pay. And we say, it's important to us, we say that we thank them as if they're our clients, they're shoppers who come in. Just at the end, they don't have to pay. So little things like that, I think, are the important part. Obviously, the big picture, you have to help people, but you can do it in a way, or you can at least try to do it in a way that has these people, helps them keep their dignity, which is a real challenge to do it that way. And that's been something that we really work on, that the staff here works on, that we're mindful that this could easily be us. We could be fleeing the other direction from Poland into Ukraine. It's not impossible, and that's what happened here before in history. So we always keep it in mind.
It's so true. I mean, I was thinking as you're talking there, it's like, you know, even just saying, like, talking about people like refugees, it's like, these are people, they don't, I'm sure, like, if I were in that situation, I'd be like, yeah, like, yes, I'm a refugee, but I'm also like, I read books, I do these things, like, don't put me in that bucket. I'm a lot more than that. So I think it's important to remember that.
FOMO. FOMO.
This show is about, like, people being overwhelmed with opportunity, right? So it's like, that is a high class problem, but it's a real problem. But, you know, it's about, in the end of the day, it's like, how do we cultivate mental fitness? Because even if you have good problems, they are still problems. But this is a whole different situation when people are, you know, there's a lot of clarity. It's like, I know what I need to do today. I need to get in the car and get out. I need to get food. I need to make sure my kid is okay, right? So a lot of the problems of the FOMO sapiens class are those disappear, right? But there's a whole new set of problems. And so when we think about people's sort of mental wellness, because, you know, that's really the stuff that carries on, and, you know, there's like long-term trauma and stuff, like, how have you sort of been able to work on that and helping people in those fronts?
Yeah, it's been a big focus of ours. So I would say the biggest challenge for us is housing. It's expensive to house people. And if they don't have a place to live, then the rest of it, you know, you can't give people psychological support or anything else, or even feed them if they don't have a place to live. So housing and food have been our biggest programs and the biggest challenge for us to continue doing. But besides that, without question, it's been the psychological aspect. And there's a particular challenge, which is, these are not people. It's not a society, which is, you know, it's not New York City, or it's not America, where it's, you know, we're sort of at a very advanced stage. Everybody talks about what meds they're on, and it's no big deal. And we're, you know, we've sort of, the idea of therapy and of seeking psychological help has, you know, very little stigma, at least in most places, I think, or we've come a long way in the United States as a society. But Ukraine is not there, and it's not such an easy thing for them to go and talk to people. So but it's a big part. It's the third largest thing that we're doing. And so we've hired a lot of psychologists. Very often we'll invite people, start in a group, and we'll say, oh, we have some experts to talk to. And we don't classify it as them speaking to a therapist, to a psychologist, but it's an important part of it. And once they speak, it's clear that they need people to speak to who are trained in this. We've worked with different Israeli NGOs and actually a Jesuit university here to do on a program to train Russian-speaking Polish psychologists in trauma, sort of dealing with trauma victims. Israel is very, very good for all the wrong reasons in dealing with trauma, because of a lot of the uncertainty and the way things happen there. So that's been a big thing for us. But besides trying to provide that for them, it's been getting them to accept it, and sometimes having to come at it not from a direct point of view of trying to slowly introduce these people into that, because, you know, they're also dealing with these issues of, should they go home? You know, at what point they feel, you know, unpatriotic, as Ukraine has, you know, it's great that Ukraine is doing well militarily, but that also makes it a lot more complicated in terms of choice. right? Yeah. Oh, should they go back? The place where they were from is liberated, but what will happen soon? Their husband, their brothers, sons, fathers are there. And there's a lot of issues. So in some ways, the fleeing is the dramatic part, but the simpler part, because of course you flee when you're presented with a situation that causes you to flee. But how to go back, to move farther on, we're trying to move people on to the United States, to Western Europe, but they want to stay close. So a lot of the issues that they're now presented with are far more complicated than they were at the early days of the war.
So the good news is that FOMO Sapiens listeners are all over the world. They're in Poland, they're in Russia. And by the way, those of you in Russia, like, you know, many of you are becoming refugees as well. We're following the news. And I hear from my readers in Russia who say, listen, like, this is really bad. You know, remember that we also, many of us are not in favor of this. And we are as shocked and terrified as you are. And we have people in the United States and all over the place. So that's good. And so I guess, Jonathan, I would ask, you know, tell us, number one, how we can help your mission. And also what we can do in our communities to help as well.
So what we're doing is dependent on support from people all around the world. So we have a dedicated campaign for Ukraine, friendsofjcckrakow.org/Ukraine. People can make a tax deductible donation that will go directly. Every penny goes to support Ukraine. So that's, you know, the obvious way to help us or help other organizations. Not only, you know, there are a lot of good organizations out there doing good work in Ukraine. You can help if you're interested in children, if you're interested in with women, with supporting Ukraine militarily. You know, there's a whole plethora of ways that people can support Ukraine, and I would encourage them to do that. And beyond that, we need to keep this at the front of the news. This is still happening. None of us thought it would be still here 7.5 months later. But you know, whatever that entails, you know, keeping, you know, writing to your congressman, as they say, or keeping it at the front of the, you know, talking about it. Don't complain too much when gas prices are higher, because it's playing into Russia's hands. So however we can do that and kind of understand that sometimes a little bit of suffering on our side helps alleviate a lot of suffering on somewhere else in the world. And keep thinking about that.
All right. I think we're going to do all of that. And I think it's so important to remember these stories. You know, I remember those first weeks of the war, and CNN had a correspondent on every corner of the country in Ukraine, which is awesome. And I appreciated it. And I watched it all. And then you sort of can't, because it takes a toll. And you can't monitor a war 24/7 from New York City. It's just not healthy. But it doesn't mean that you can't stay in touch and find ways to help. So definitely, everybody, go find Jonathan online and support. All right, Jonathan Orenstein, Executive Director of the Jewish Community Center of Krakow. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, my friend.
FOMO. If you like today's show, please be sure to rate it and recommend it to your friends. And as always, you can find me on Instagram at Patrick J. McGinnis, on Twitter at PJ McGinnis, and on the web at FOMOSapiens.com or PatrickMcGinnis.com, where you can get all kinds of free resources to live a more decisive and entrepreneurial life. FOMO. Want more FOMO Sapiens and FOMO Monday? Head over to FOMOSapiens.com, where you can listen to past episodes, learn more about the show, and find out how to advertise. You can also connect with me on Instagram at Patrick J. McGinnis and on Twitter at PJ McGinnis.